Tonight on the Flophouse, we talk about prom night, the stabbingest night in a young girl's life. Everybody, welcome to the Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
Yay!
We're back.
All back together at the same time.
The original Peaches, except not, because I was not original.
I'd cross oceans of time for you guys.
Oh, wow. Thanks, buddy.
It's very nice.
That is sweet.
I got that from a movie, though.
What movie?
I think Last of the Mohicans.
Hmm. Well, Stuart, where have you been?
I don't know, around, away on work, vacationing, in California.
I hear that that's a bright and sunny place.
You've been Californicationing.
Yeah, hey, that's a show and a song. No, I went to In-N-Out Burger a couple times, that was good, but, then I saw Michael Cera on the street, who looks like a turtle.
Like a baby turtle.
Not like a different type of turtle.
Explain for Dan and the audience at home why Michael Cera looks like a different kind of turtle than Fisher Stevens.
It's hard to explain. There's something a little more sinister about the Fisher Stevens turtle. He'd be the evil turtle uncle in the Turtle King Disney cartoon, whereas Michael Cera would be our hero, who's just a baby turtle.
All right.
Turtle-o or something like that.
Yeah.
Shelly or something.
Shelly, I think that's a good one.
Hey.
Sheldon.
Hey, dudes.
Okay, what's up?
I got news.
Okay, cool.
Lay it on us.
It's October.
Shocktober.
Okay.
Shocktober here at the Flophouse. That means we're watching only horror movies for the whole two episodes of the Flophouse.
Oh, no.
So when are we starting?
So we're starting tonight. October
Wait
is,
a minute.
October is much like the first 12 episodes of the Flophouse.
Shut up. Maybe we like certain types of movies better.
Okay, but
I'm to blame, if anybody.
Yeah?
No, there's no
I like horror movies. Even good ones.
Well, what did we watch tonight, though? Was it good?
Well, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it was called Prom Night, Dan.
And it Prom was, Night Dan.
No, it was the movie. It was called Prom Night, and I was addressing Dan.
Oh,
now, Prom Night is a remake of another movie called Prom Night, I think. Although I don't, I think Jamie Lee Curtis was in it. Is that the one with the zombie guy on the motorcycle with flames and shit, or is that Prom
Night
2?
No, you're thinking of Ghost Rider.
No.
Okay, nice. I am thinking of Ghost Rider, actually.
Prom Night was a 1980 film. It was made in Canada, and it looks it. And it has Leslie Nielsen playing Jamie Lee Curtis's dad back before he only made comedy spoof
before
films.
The career-defining hits Spy Hard and 2001 A Space Travesty.
Right.
And Mafia, right?
And
he wasn't in that, though.
Oh.
It was one of
Jamie
Lee Curtis's
movie.
Scream Queen films, along with Halloween, Halloween 2, Terror Train.
Trading Places.
Yeah, sure.
True Lies.
Carpool.
I've seen movies with her in
Freaky
it.
Friday. Terrifying Freaky Friday.
Blue Steel.
But the movies are nothing alike. I mean, the thing about, briefly, Prom Night is a movie about
which one?
The original one.
Okay.
I'm already confused.
A kid dies at the beginning of the movie.
That's weird.
And then when they're teenagers, all the kids sort of responsible for that kid dying get picked off one by one.
So it's like Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
But at a prom instead of a summer camp.
And the Friday the 13th isn't like the kids who did it are
no,
getting killed.
No, that's true. It's just kids who are acting out the same ethos and lack of care.
It's right. It's kind of like Final Destination.
Yeah.
But instead of death trying to kill people for avoiding some crazy death thing, it's, I don't know, a revenge thing.
But the weird thing about the original Prom Night is it's one of these movies where, okay, at the beginning, the accidental death of this child is witnessed by her brother, and you're like, oh, okay, the brother's probably the killer. But surely there'll be a twist in this movie. We'll think it's the brother, but it'll be someone else. Maybe it'll be Leslie Nielsen, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the film, the killer gets unmasked, and holy shit, it's the brother. As if that was going to be a surprise to us.
Yeah, it was pretty crappy, if I recall.
Yeah, and also there was a 15-minute segment towards the end where everyone disco dances.
That was called Pad Night.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have to face
it. That has nothing to do with the updated prom.
I think we can all agree there, like, the best horror movie that involves a prom that can be made has been made, and that was Carrie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a strong movie in terms of a teen story, and then also a strong movie in terms of people getting, you know, all bloody at the end. And John Travolta kills a pig in it. Like, you're not going to top that, I don't think.
It's challenging.
There's also, I mean, the Chud 2, Bud the Chud, which ends with a zombie prom.
It's true.
Yeah,
they're prombies. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
But the and of course Teen Wolf has. Now, I don't know if it's a prom or just a dance.
And Teen Wolf is definitely a horror movie.
About a ravening teenage wolf.
It's the story about a werewolf who plays basketball. I don't know what the problem is.
It's terrifying.
I would like to see a movie. It wasn't even a werewolf. It was just like, oh, this wolf is 13.
Imagine being on the basketball court with that teen.
Well, that's kind of Ginger Snaps a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But like, genuinely imagine if you had to play basketball against a werewolf, you'd be fucking frightened.
I know. Well, we've talked about this before, I think, how it's amazing that the other teams continued to play against the werewolf team, and that the story never got out to the press.
Yeah, well, no,
because werewolf is one story, but basketball playing werewolf is a bigger story.
Yeah, it's also pretty open.
I would imagine that season just looked like a series of forfeits. forfeit.
Yeah,
okay.
another winning season.
Yeah. Anyway, but the real prom night, not the real.
The werewolf
night,
is graduating. Our basketball team is going to go downhill fast. Mm-hmm. Quick. Glue these carpet samples on. We'll tell them we have a new werewolf on the team.
Yeah.
Teen Wolf 3, not a wolf.
But anyway, the prom night we watched tonight was the 2007 prom night, I guess. Was it released? Or was it released early this year? It might even be 2008. It might be like a February graveyard release where they just dump everything.
I think it was just before the end of the year because they were probably trying to get it into consideration for the Oscars.
That makes sense. I would have assumed that they would release it around like June or May when proms are happening.
Or around Halloween. When scary things happen. when death stalks the silver screen.
And for one glorious night, people go crazy and start worshiping monsters and death.
Yeah, but I think that they released it in March when shitty things happen. I think that was the theme that they were capitalizing on.
If it's March, shitty things. It's either prom night comes out or Julius Caesar gets assassinated. It is a crappy month.
Oh, but God, this movie did not skimp on the prom, though. That's one thing.
It skimped
prom
on
night.
It skimped on the plot, the character development, the gore, and the excitement, but there was a ton of prom.
Yeah, this movie is slightly less than 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Probably 88 minutes.
And it's slightly less than a satisfying experience.
And 10 minutes into the movie, they arrive at prom.
Yep. What a prom.
And the prom itself is insane. It looks like the set of MTV's The Grind, I guess.
But most movies, most horror movies, where like it's based around an event, there's a build to the event. Like the event happens.
Yeah, you
like
meet the characters
40 minutes
in. Well, going
the movie.
Back to Carrie, the prom happens like an hour and a half into the film. Like it's the climax of the movie.
Basically, what happens is at the beginning, there's one of those horror movie beginnings when like one or two killings get out of the way right up front. So, like we gotta fill a quota, you know, like maybe people think that they're in the wrong film if someone doesn't get killed immediately and they're gonna walk out of the theater. So like this girl's family gets killed.
Including
a little kid, which was pretty awesome. Yeah. Although altogether very bloodless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're stabbed to death, but it's kinda like they're stabbed to death with like a knife that sprays out an invisible ink that covers up blood, like DD7 or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
or maybe it's just like a poison ice pick. They're like, here's a really small entry wound, and they die, and that's it.
Because like this entire movie labors under the belief that the human body actually doesn't have very much blood, and to cause a lethal wound to somebody, it doesn't actually involve very much blood at all.
The human body holds like a cup of blood.
Yeah, in general, the people that are killed in this movie are killed from like internal wounds that you can't really tell. You're like, why did that guy die? That's not very much
blood.
Well,
I imagine they're all hemophiliacs and the blood is all, they're all bleeding internally.
And also, the killer is like a fucking samurai because every time he kills somebody, there's not a single drop of blood on him.
But he can move. He can move without making a noise. He can travel through mirrors and shadows. And he's good at everything. It helps that we'll get to this, I guess, but every other character in the movie is incompetent.
You're describing a much more exciting killer than that actually
was. I know. When in this case,
through mirrors and shadows.
He's just kind of an emotionless guy who appears behind people and then kills them.
Yeah, but all right, so he's a teacher. He's obsessed with this girl. He kills her family.
Kills her family because he loves her and he wants to take her away.
Right. She's put away. Then we flash forward into the future.
3 years.
And,
not like the far future.
Yeah, she hasn't changed.
She doesn't go to a space prom.
Much like in the Bratz movie.
It's not Logan's Run.
Yes.
And much like in the Bratz movie, she looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
3 years in the future. And
She's gone from about probably the age of 14 to 17, let's say, and she looks exactly the same. Not a time when people change.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes into the movie, we are in a limo going to prom. Mm-hmm. And that's all the setup you need.
She probably likes the same rock bands as she used to.
Yes. And the killer is this teacher who's obsessed with her, and that's one thing that this does share with the original Prom Night, is that there is no mystery as to who's killing. You're like, oh, this guy's killing. She'll probably think that he's back later on, but it's going to turn out to be someone else. Like, that's just going to be a red herring. No, it's the same guy.
Although, I mean, they play it straight. They don't try to make it a mystery. He's...
Yeah.
I know, but it's the most boring... Okay, this is a teacher who's obsessed with her, and thus that means he kills people.
Just because that information is thrown out to us in a conversation between two policemen who we have not seen before and can't do their jobs properly, and then more exposition is piled on top of it, you're saying it's not exciting or dramatically interesting? I don't...
Wait. Maybe I didn't follow the movie very correctly. The killer didn't have a beard, but the teacher had a beard.
Here's another problem. So the teacher was captured, put in a mental hospital, and then I guess they shaved his beard and his head because of the lice problems.
Let's make it clear that the killer initially
looked like Charles Manson.
And this is a high school teacher.
Or Jim Caviezel in Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, like everybody's high school teacher.
But he looks like a crazy bum killer.
Like everybody's high school gym teacher or science teacher. He looks like he crawled out from under the boardwalk and then got to class, taught you, and then went to a crack house.
And then hung out with Brian Wilson and killed a bunch of people.
He gets into a men's hospital, they shave off his crazy hair and beard, and he escapes looking, you know, like a shorn person. But the cops, the picture they're working off of is still his mugshot from 3 years ago with the hair and the beard, and every time they show it to people, they're like, no, haven't seen this guy.
Haven't seen that guy wearing the ski mask and the cowboy hat.
Yeah, I was saying that I wanted... Like, there's a point in which one of the teens, like, sees and is like, there's something about that guy that rings a bell. And I wanted a scene where she somehow gets, like...
Was that Columbo?
Yeah.
Just one more thing.
But, like, I wanted a scene where she somehow got a hold of a photo of the guy, and then she, like, drew, like, a beard on him and a mustache. I'm like, holy shit. It's like, or, like, some, like, novelty, like... mustache and beard sticker like got put on that.
The picture actually falls into a Woolly Willy magnet and metal shavings toy, and she arranges the beard around it.
Or she's standing across a crowded room from the guy. The guy turns toward her, and somebody else hands like a phony beard and mustache to a friend across her line of vision.
She's behind a plate glass window.
For a moment,
some Joker's like, "Look what happens when I draw. Looks like that guy's a mustache and a beard." Wait a minute.
He enters a Manson lookalike contest and puts on a fake beard. Has there ever been a joke in a TV show where there's a police sketch artist using a Woolly Willy to put together sketches of criminals?
I think so.
Oh, that
it sounds like it.
That's a funny joke.
Sounds like a Family Guy joke.
Yeah, you're right. Now I hate it.
Burn.
But she goes to prom. Killer gets there and takes his sweet time murdering about 8 or 9 people.
Yeah, I bet that she has some really like unique and interesting friends, Elliot. I bet that there's like a...
Well, let me tell you about these exciting characters. Friends that we meet right away. There's her black friend and her white friend, and each of them has a boyfriend. And she has a boyfriend, too.
Huh. So do they have any hobbies or...
Well, the one couple wants to have sex, and the other couple, the boyfriend's mad because the girlfriend is going to school far away from
him. Yeah, that seems to be one of their interests, Dan. They're interested in talking about what's going to happen in the future.
And the main couple talks about how great their relationship is and how much they love each other.
Yeah, yeah. So that's two hobbies, loving each other and being interested in the future.
All right, to be fair, I guess that they do have some characteristics. One of the guys...
Yeah, one's black, the other two are white.
Drinks a lot.
Yeah,
the one guy drinks a lot.
And then the black guy wants to propose to his girlfriend.
Yeah, we found
Although
that
that's
out.
A throwaway moment.
Even though they're like in high school.
And there's no foreshadowing for that. Like, yeah.
So
they seem like they kind of got thrown together in a couple because they're the only two black students in the class.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I want to marry her, because he doesn't realize there's other black females.
Outside of the town of Bridgeport, in which this takes place.
Yeah, Bridgeport, the town of one amazing hotel and nothing else.
One astounding hotel that's like 100,000 stories tall, and every room is a suite with, you know, expensive furnishings, and the prom has giant searchlights outside and a huge ballroom with a giant screen, and they're on a glowing platform floor. And
well,
they sold a lot of band candy.
And yet there's like five cops in the town, and they're all fucking sucky at their job.
Well, that's all the funding in the town goes directly to the hotel. And the thing is, Elliot,
this hotel gets a lot of subsidies from the town government. There's an interesting story in there that the mayor owns the hotel. He's been embezzling all this money from the town to the hotel. The hotel is going bankrupt. They can't even finish construction on it. Remember, because she runs into that part that's not finished yet.
It's filled with doves.
Yeah, it's filled with doves. Yeah, there were a lot of side characters that could have been more interesting. There was a lesbian gym teacher who was the only chaperone at the prom. There's this imaginary mayor we haven't gotten into.
Sure.
There's two policemen who are named Hicks and Stryker that only briefly appear, but I wish the movie was about them.
Yeah.
Like, why Stryker decided to go into the Bridgeport Police Force instead of the Special Forces. Maybe he was in the Special Forces or the French Foreign Legion.
And for some reason, either had to leave or he chose to leave.
Absolutely. He saw one too many alien killings, and like he just had to get out of that line of work.
And Hicks is either like a goofball or a real dedicated cop who respects the other guy's covert training, but at the same time, he's envious of it, so he disrespects him.
He tries to one-up him.
Yeah.
This is a movie you can make, Elliot, like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of
Prom Night? You know, like, oh, that sounds good.
Hicks Prom Night Stryker is so great, but there's a whole story about these two minor characters. What about them?
It's like Family Matters to Perfect Strangers, that sort of thing. Now, the whole thing about the prom is like in the featurette, the making of featurette we just watched, it explains how like the prom in this movie is like everybody else's prom, like times 10.
It's
like
a fantasy prom.
Just like how the teacher's beard was like your high school teacher's beard.
Bigger.
Absolutely. Like to the next level. That's how I view the teacher's beard and hair.
Okay, that makes sense. It's interesting because they made it sound like it was supposed to be a very over-the-top, like purposely exaggerated movie, but you never get that feeling watching the movie. It just feels like...
It just feels unrealistic.
And it's just like
It doesn't feel Fellini-esque,
yeah,
you know,
or
anything.
Moulin Rouge or something.
Yeah.
It's the ages of the students. Like, the ages of the students at your prom plus 10, roughly.
Well, for instance, the main character's boyfriend, played by Jason Street of Friday Night Lights.
Absolutely.
I don't know what that actor's name is, but we'll call him Jason Street.
Did he go to that high school? I think you said he was like the son of a landscaper.
No, that was my explanation for why a guy that old was dating a high school
student. Yeah, that's the thing.
He's clearly like 28, 30, 32,
47, 60.
Yeah.
65.
He's listening to his agent. He believes he can still play, 17? 18?
Yeah. You know, I've been told I can play anywhere from 17 to 32. No, so you should
that's a pretty good range.
He sells it better on Friday Night Lights. I don't know whether it's the wheelchair or what.
Yeah, it's because he's paralyzed. Paralyzed people have old
they
faces.
Seem younger.
They've been through a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, a bunch of really sort of interchangeable characters.
Sure.
Go to the prom. And I think it's really interesting the way that they each get killed off, because the way this movie has been constructed, there's no reason for the killer to kill anyone except for the girl he's obsessed with.
But why is he even trying to kill her? I thought he loved her.
Well, he wants her to come with him, and he's going to kill her if he can't get her, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's a very complicated pathology.
That makes sense.
You shouldn't hurt at all.
That's why I've been doing that.
That's why I've been hurting my girlfriend so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why they're those corpses.
Yep.
But like the way the movie is structured is the killer hides in their hotel room.
Right.
And they one by one go up to the room and he kills them.
Yeah. It's
like a Venus flytrap.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
except less exciting.
Sort of like set up. It's like,
so are you suggesting
one by
that
one they go into the dark room? Like, whoa.
Thunk.
Are you suggesting
is that you, Abbott? You must have gone to this room. What? It's so dark in here. Thunk.
Yeah.
You know,
so are you putting forward that video renters or people who use Netflix or whatever should, instead of renting this movie, just go out and buy a Venus flytrap and watch that for
that, I guarantee,
minutes.
Will be more, even if you don't have flies in the area.
Or
be more
sea
exciting.
Monkeys. I mean, they don't kill anything, but they also...
They do if you train them.
Those are guard sea monkeys, Elliot.
Oh, those are different, yeah.
Yeah, so except people get
I was
killed.
Thinking of military-trained monkeys that wear flippers and dive with Navy SEALs and everything. Work with Navy frogmen. Yeah,
you were thinking of the 96 sea monkeys unit.
Now, one of the things that I really loved about this movie, in addition to the complete lack of gore, because,
was a PG-13 horror movie.
This was like,
it was unrated. The DVD box said unrated.
But yeah. By unrated, they meant like it wasn't gruesome enough to get a rating. Like it didn't even get a G rating.
Nice.
But it's like a horror movie that like Howie Mandel directed. Like he was afraid of getting his hands dirty the whole time.
Like Little Monsters? Well, he didn't direct that.
He didn't write that when he's in it.
He should have.
Yeah.
All I remember about Little Monsters is the monster pees into something and pretends it's apple juice.
Yeah,
and they give it to the
cat food
the
for
bully.
Tuna fish.
Is there a scene in that where like something pulls Fred Savage's pants down or something like that?
Probably.
I remember as a kid seeing that in a commercial and being like, that's inappropriate.
Yeah, no, that movie, I watched it growing up on HBO. And I'm like, this is, like, even as a kid, I'm like, this is a deeply perverse children's
yeah,
film.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
This is a dirty feeling.
I watched that movie on VHS as a kid, and I was like, why wasn't this released in theaters? That's great. Monsters
like
living in your bed.
The Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's its own horrible thing.
In addition to complete lack of gore, which I think I've mentioned a couple times, is the police work. Luckily,
oh,
the police work is really abysmal. Yeah.
As they say in the making of, they combine so many different genres, as he says. Because genres rounds with a hard J sound, apparently. It's a police procedural. It's a killer on the loose movie. It's a teen movie. And as a police procedural, it fails on every level because the police have no procedure. It's just kind of like, I guess, well, there's a killer on the loose. I guess we'll hang around a while.
Well, they learned that the guy escaped. They learned that the guy escaped like 3 days before prom or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And they don't.
But they were so caught
anyone.
Up in prom madness to really worry about it.
And then their solution is like, okay, this guy's probably going to track down this girl. We're going to go to prom. We're not going to reveal our presence at prom.
And
we're
going to
watch from the sidelines.
We're
going
to hang around. I think what happened is that he didn't get to go to prom when he was a kid. So he like, I'm going to stop this killer. And then he saw prom was going on. He was like, you know, I never had the things.
What
other
a magical
had.
Time.
So this is what prom's like.
You know, yeah, it just
I
became.
I feel like a prince. I think part of it, though, was after they found out everybody had already left for prom. So he went and talked to the girl's aunt and uncle who the girl was living with. Donna, I believe, was the character.
Yeah, the aunt dropped a big plate because she was so horrified.
Yeah, which, who called that? Was that you,
Dan?
I
called that.
Good job.
That
and then he was like, yeah, you know, this killer's probably on the loose. He's probably going to go kill Donna. They're like, I don't know if we should interrupt prom. I mean. It's a big time in a
girl's
there's a
life. Conversation between the aunt and uncle later where the aunt is like, you're the one who didn't want her to, didn't think we should take her back home. And I don't remember what his rationale was, but it was something like, well, it's prom night.
Yeah, also, I just want to point out.
Memories last forever.
The aunt, played by the coach's
this night will be with her as long as she lives.
Sister on Friday Night Lights. And the two cops are characters from The Wire, Stringer Bell and Ziggy. So,
yep.
So there's a whole Friday Night Lights, The Wire thing going on here. But I would recommend that you watch those two television programs rather than watching.
It means
prom
as
night.
Bad as this movie is, the people who made it have good taste in television.
Yeah, they're like, oh, these are fine actors. Maybe they'll elevate this.
The same way where even if I was making like a bikini car wash type movie, I would hire a lot of actors that I like, you know, from old television shows and stuff to give them work.
Well, I really like bikini car wash.
Kevin O'Rourke from Remember When? I've got a role for you. Come on down, you know.
But,
Todd Barry, you know, I'd love to have you in this. And he's not really a TV actor, but, you know.
So, but the cops, Stringer Bell and Ziggy, the cops, they go to prom. They hang out. They lurk. They don't tell anyone.
They
use
look
their
creepy.
Cell phones.
They look creepy. They're two adults hanging around prom just watching.
Although, arguably, the one adult looks about the same age as the kids, except he has a mustache.
He has the beginnings of a mustache.
Okay. So they keep their eye on like the main girl until one point when like Ziggy comes in. He's like, oh, there's something in the parking lot you got to see. And they go out and they look at a corpse in the trunk of a car.
Of the
and
killer's car, I assume.
Yeah. And that's when the girl leaves. And I'm like, the guy just tell him, I was like, oh, I found a corpse in the car. Someone's definitely here. Now's the time to remove this girl from prom.
He was waiting to get a really good picture of the guy's reaction for like some kind of a police bloopers.
For the holiday party.
He was really trying to get him to do a spit take or
now
something.
Now we got
to
paste this on your locker.
He's like, I put a delicious banana split for you in the trunk. There my,
if I could tell a brief story about policemen's lockers. I remember as a Cub Scout, going on a tour of the local police station, and the police officer is showing us around the building and everything, and he takes us to the locker room and opens up his locker to show us his gear, and inside there's a Polaroid of him sitting in a chair and a stripper hanging her naked boobs over his head. And he was, and I remember him turning to, like, trying to ignore that it was there, and then turning to the den mother who had brought us on this tour and being like, that was a bachelor party from one of the other policemen, you know?
I like that he turns to her, he explains to her, he's ignoring the fact that you're
that we
you're
can there. All see it.
I feel like I need to apologize to you, the adult,
but I,
so I'm not covering it up. Later, I mean... Yeah, that's an awesome story.
Thank
that
you.
Didn't happen in this movie, sadly.
No, I haven't thought about that experience in probably 11 years, so, you know.
Flophouse brings memory back.
It does, yeah. It's like this is my remembrance of things past. Exactly. Prom night is my, you know, whatever, is it Madeline? Yeah.
So,
oh, but so the police are, so they stand around and look in the body in the trunk for about 30 minutes, and
sure.
The killer kills people, and Donna gets something, and then he's chasing
the one girl. I hate to just like keep identifying her by race,
Lisa.
But the thing
Lisa's
is, like,
her name.
They have
you can remember her because the African American girl in this had the same name, Lisa, as the African American character in Saved by the Bell, played by Lark Voorhees.
Sure.
So Lisa, like,
I assume her last name was Turtle, just like Lisa Turtle in Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of Saved by the Bell at college years while I was on my vacation recently. Not as good.
No, and that's saying something, considering Saved by the Bell is a terrible show.
Well, we can agree to disagree. Let's go on.
But Lisa runs off. She realizes who the guy is, and she runs off, and she gets attacked by him. And she runs, as Stuart alluded to earlier, she runs into an area of the hotel that is just exposed wooden beams and plastic sheeting. And, I mean, this is
some
like
sort
a
of
luxury hotel.
Some sort of lighting that kind of fades on and off.
Yeah,
and
apparently they're not finished building it, and they haven't blocked off that part
of
the
hotel. Yeah, it's easily accessible for the patrons.
And there were no deleted scenes on the DVD about how the hotel was having trouble finishing construction.
Yeah. Basically, the killer just was like... I'm going to chase you into the spooky area of the hotel.
Where there's doves.
The best part of that is he chases her into the spooky area, and then her boyfriend, who's looking for her, the elevator doors open at an area of the hotel that patrons should be allowed in, that they happen to be in, and there's no reason he should know they're in there, and goes, Lisa! Lisa? Yeah, she's not here. And the doors close, and then he goes somewhere else. Like,
yeah.
Stupid.
Well, and that's for that moment where she's like, should I call out? But if I do, I might get stabbed by the killer. Like, that, it was that tension they were looking for. And frankly, they achieved it.
I got to tell you, the killer, the one time that he didn't prove himself to me was when he's chasing her down the stairs and her shoe broke and she fell down. That was unfair. He had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. Maybe he did have something to do with it.
Maybe he cut her
heel.
While she was making out with her boyfriend, he was just slicing away slightly at the heel with his magic knife that he uses to do everything with.
Yep.
So, but anyway, once they realize that people are getting killed, finally the cops spring into
action. Where did he get that knife, by the way? He had it when he was in the like insane asylum.
Yeah, he must have smuggled it in his rectum or something.
Did he make it? I like to think
that looked like a Leatherman professional knife. Like,
I don't
that
know.
Was...
He's pretty adept at doing things. Yeah. He was a high school teacher.
You're saying he did teach a knife making class.
Yep.
So you're saying that this is like Rambo, and each time he goes out on a mission, he makes a new knife for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but finally the cops spring into action. They
the cops lurch
slightly
into action.
Well,
yeah.
They call a bunch of guys with mustaches and SWAT gear from the next town over.
They evacuate.
I like to believe
hotel.
That they're just guys who are at a costume party dressed as SWAT guys.
Yeah. They go. They take the girl away. They send one cop with her, and they don't take the girl to the police precinct. They allow her to go home.
They take her home, and then the cop who's supposed to be keeping the house secure sits in his car while everyone else is in the house, and he just keeps rubbing his ear and like, you know, and the other cop calls him and is like, you got to check in on them. No, the area is secure. Check in on them. And you kind of get the idea that in previous cases, this guy has refused to get out of his car. Like, he knows that it's a habit of his to just sit in his car not doing anything.
It's a nice car. It's got heated seats. He's got one of those beaded things that massage you when you drive.
Cup holder.
He's got a PSP.
In the car? Like built into the car?
Yeah, well, no, he brought it. It's in the glove box, and he pulls it out and plays whatever video games kids play nowadays. Or cops.
A Bubble Bobble, I think.
Sure, Bubble. Yep. Sure. Bionic Commando.
Yeah.
Dig Dug.
River City Ransom.
Playing, Dig Dug. they're all playing A Boy and His Blob.
Maniac Mansion. You want to get in this game?
Let's name some more. Sure.
Really? Okay. Kazar.
Mega Man X2.
Nice. So the thing is, like, I think the reason he stayed in his car is because
Marvel. Oh, he said Marvel.
There were at least like four or five scenes where somebody's like, "Hey, buddy, friend," and walk over to the person like, "Are you asleep?" Lift up the person's head. Oh my God, their neck slashed.
I kept thinking of this of the trailer that Eli Roth made for Grindhouse for the Thanksgiving movie, where like she's kissing the guy and it's just a head in the body, and she goes down on another guy and she looks up and his head falls off. Like, it was that kind of thing where, like, it was ridiculous.
There's no way that, like, first of all, I would imagine a neck wound would bleed a lot. Like, I haven't seen anybody who's had their neck slashed.
There's a thing called arterial spray,
it's
though.
It's one of the major arteries in your body.
Yeah, so a lot of blood would get everywhere. Like, I don't think it would be, like, just artful, like, hey, let's spray a little blood here. It would be like all over the place.
Well, he soaks his knife in liquid nitrogen before cutting people with
it. He soaks his knife in a coagulant so that the people clot almost instantly.
It's kind of like a lightsaber.
He's
then.
Sort of in like an OCD.
Yeah,
cauterizes.
Cauterizes. Thing. I couldn't remember the word.
Nice.
Professional writer. Can't remember the word cauterize.
Pierce Stewart, cauterize.
Yeah. Boom. Daily Show soaks.
All of our cauterization jokes. I'm such a hypocrite. But there are a lot of scenes where people don't realize there's a dead body. She's hiding under a bed at one point as the killer looks for her, and she's under the bed for about 2 minutes and then looks over and notices there's a dead body centimeters away from her.
Yep, yeah. Like looking at her. I don't know about you guys, but every time I duck under a bed when I'm avoiding a killer, I check pretty clearly if there's another killer down there.
Because you want room to stretch out.
Yeah, and you want to make sure there
for a while.
Yeah, you want to make sure there isn't like a killer's like evil twin down there too.
You want to make sure it's not like Basket Case and the killer's like, you know, Siamese twin brother who's a tiny gremlin down there.
Yeah, like a little ghouly. I also want to make sure
that's also why I check my toilet every time before I sit down.
They'll get you in the end.
Yeah. the poster, you know,
it's
scarred
also
me
why
for life.
I check under the skirts of women with poodle skirts and fishnet stockings to make sure a munchie isn't down there. But frankly, I also check down there to make sure there aren't a shitload of like gross spiders and stuff, because if there's a killer chasing me, the last thing I want is to be bit by a gross spider.
Well, but you saw that hotel. It was super clean.
Yeah, and when was the last time you've been in a hotel where you can actually climb under the bed?
That's true.
Not recently.
But anyway, speaking of the hotel, while they're at home with one guy on the girl, Stringer Bell realizes, oh, look, there's blood up here in the air vent. He stuffed a body in the air vent, and he switched out the hotel, you know, uniform, and he escaped when everyone was evacuating. You know, I think that, number one, he might have checked the people that were being evacuated. He might, like...
No, they just let everyone rush out in a big crowd.
Yeah, but number two, the guy escaped from the mental institution through an air vent, so...
And wearing somebody else's clothes.
So
the other thing is, like, yeah, I mean, like, the guy just left. Like, if he let the guy walk by him... What was he expecting the killer to look like? Was he like?
He thought he had a beard and a lot of crazy
and
hair,
like a lot of blood on, like on a knife. Like.
Well, listen, we all beards know what killers look like. They're wearing hockey masks and they've got big machetes and a ton of blood on them.
Or Freddy Krueger faces.
I like the idea.
Just get rid of a beard
at the police academy. Like, how do you identify a killer? Well, let's take a look.
That's okay.
He's gonna have either crazy hair or a crazy beard. Maybe if he's got blood all over him, that's a good clue. And if not, then he's not a killer.
I'm imagining like a Hogan's Alley type situation where like cardboard cutouts flip around. You're like, baby, woman with a baby, normal person, killer with a beard.
Yeah.
And then it says, what if that's a killer without a beard? No such thing. Correct. You passed.
100%.
100%. You're now an honorary sheriff.
Now you're in Hero Squad.
Yeah.
Well, here's your machine gun.
That'd be the best TV show. Squad. Hero Squad. They're the cops who break the rules because they have to.
Hero Squad with Stryker and Hicks.
Hero Squad. Stryker and Hicks. Hero Squad. Not really police. They just do stuff.
And their Native American tracker, Steel Wolf.
Steel
and
Wolf.
Hunter Dark Blade.
Dark Claw. Blood Iron. Sleek Shadow. Storm Striker.
They have a... Whoa, is Storm Striker related to Detective Striker?
Yeah, they're brothers.
Oh, okay. But Storm, like blood brothers, right?
Storm Striker is actually a weatherman. Oh, nice. He didn't go into the police force.
Nice. So how many of those guys were Native American trackers?
Almost all of them.
Nice, but they're bringing their expertise to like a more urban environment?
Well, you know, now they left the reservation. There wasn't a lot of future for them there. They took construction work, and now they're in the police force.
They can follow, they can read like pigeon droppings.
They're the only ones who can track the wolfen that are at large in the city. So,
nice. Oh man, so many wolfen in New York.
I mean, they went down briefly when Giuliani was mayor, but now they're back.
Yeah, the wolfen and the chuds, man. Anyway, but at the end, there's an exciting confrontation. Oh wait, no, there's not.
It's incredibly anticlimactic.
The girl kicks him twice.
That's why this is another one of those
things. Shoots him.
Where it's like she kicks him in the face really hard,
like three times.
Yeah, and it's where did
and
she
they had
learn
a really
to do
good
this?
Meat slapping sound effect, like a fucking Indiana Jones movie. Like, where'd you learn to kick? And second of all, have you ever kicked somebody's head with your shoe off? It hurts like a bitch. Like, even if you have a lot of adrenaline going through,
well, probably
it hurts.
She's probably got calluses all over her feet from cheerleading practice or something.
That's true. And from running to hide under beds.
Yeah.
I wish they'd explored that area of her personality a little more. Like, they showed, like, her growing up since
it'd be interesting,
3
like,
years
you
ago,
show her
like, constantly hiding under beds.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, she goes to sleep under a bed because it's the only place she feels safe.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's where she eats dinner.
Goes to school.
Sure.
Takes a bed into school with her and lies underneath it.
Nice. That'd be awkward, but I bet she could do it.
You'd really think that she
been
would...
I school nowadays, but...
You know what you'd think is that...
her the homework assignment under the bed.
Sure.
You'd think that the teacher at the school went crazy, killed her family. You'd think she would leave town and go to another school system. I would.
If a teacher got really obsessed with me sexually and then killed my entire family, I'd probably go to a different town.
Yeah.
But I would still be really excited about
it. Maybe
prom.
You'd even change your name. I don't know.
Nope.
No?
I would remain Striker Steel Wolf. Okay.
Well, let's...
Your birth name.
Dr. Inferno Fireburns.
Let's wrap it up, because there's really not that much about this movie to talk about. We should just get on to our
Magma
final,
Hot Steel.
Final judgments.
Dan's favorite, Mean Man Cruelsome.
Yeah. He's the villain, though.
Oh, wait a minute. What if... Oh, my God. I've been making the wrong movie. I got to get out of here.
Change my name to Punch Slab Rock Fist.
Yep. Okay, so wait, final judgments?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Is this a good, bad movie, bad movie, or a movie that you actually genuinely like?
You know, I think a lot like the movie, this our final judgments are going to be a complete switcheroony from what we've been talking about the whole time. No, I'm lying. It's not very good. It's a bad movie. I would never watch this again.
Yeah, I was saying during the movie, it's like one of those pictures made up of a lot of pictures, not like those like collage pictures, not like the Truman Show poster, but one of those pictures where it's like we've taken 100 photographs of a person and merged them.
I've never seen one
to create like an average photo of like the features, and this is sort of that the version of that. We took 100 slasher films and we've merged them, so only the blandest version,
only
of the
similarities
film.
Appear.
Yeah.
Wait, where do you see these types of pictures?
Oh, you know. The internet.
He's got a prescription. Okay. He's got a subscription to Crazy Picture Magazine.
Okay.
The craziest pictures every month in your mailbox.
I thought that was a weekly.
That's Goofy Photo Weekly.
Sure, my mistake. Okay, so that's two bad movies.
And
okay.
I'm gonna say, shockingly, as you said, it's a bad movie. What I said while we were watching is it felt like an outline for a movie. First, there's the scene with the killer. Then there's the scene with the therapist where we explain what happened. Then it's prom time. There's a scene where they're getting ready for prom. Then they're on the way to prom. Like, there was no connective tissue and there was no fleshing out. It was just like the points you had to hit to tell this terrible story. I will say a lot of the scenes were lit well. I don't know who did the lighting, but it was well lit a lot of the time.
Yeah, and good casting of the minor characters.
The minor character, and that's
major
the thing.
Characters.
It was like... At times it felt like they were like, well, we're making this by-the-numbers slasher film. Maybe we'll have Robert Altman cast the side characters and create their backstories. Because it's like just that like lesbian gym teacher was so much more interesting, even though she has about 40 seconds on screen, than Donna.
You know, if this movie had just been a movie where the police are really bad at their jobs, I might have liked it. I mean,
it would have been Armed and Dangerous.
I liked Lethal Weapon 2, you know?
Or Loaded Weapon 1.
Loaded Weapon 1. Yeah, absolutely. Or 9.5 Ninjas.
Or Beverly Hills Ninja.
Any of these movies.
Three Ninjas.
Three Ninjas, nice.
Kick Back.
Sidekicks?
Yes.
Sidekicks.
With Chuck Norris.
Oh, man. Now we're probably going to be able to be Googled now since we mentioned Chuck Norris.
Yeah, that's
pretty
true.
He's pretty hilarious.
He's lost his cred now that he's everyone knows he's a Huckabee conservative type.
Okay.
But anyway, you were saying if it was just about incompetent police,
I probably would have liked it, but it was also not very interesting or anything else.
It was very boring. It was not 10,000 BC boring.
Yeah. No, of course not. I think that would be unfair.
I think
Let's
the 10,000 BC has been the nadir of the
that is the dullest movie
of the program
we have watched.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Even One Missed Call was better than that.
Oh yeah.
That's just the song. The song the bear plays.
On that note, on that happy note, let's move on.
Spear tooth. Mannix. He took down a Mannix all by himself.
Before we get into our recommendations, I have a few announcements to make.
You sound so excited.
Yeah.
You know me. I'm filled with joy.
What you guys
life.
Don't know is that every time we do one of these, Dan is drinking out of a bottle of gin. And so if it sounds like his energy is flagging by the end, it's because he's just thinking about the people he's wronged. Their faces swimming before him.
Yep, he keeps picking up a photo of his lost love and putting it down and picking it up and putting it down. I think her name was Angela.
Look, I'm sorry if you guys find that distracting. Anyway, I bet some of you, not all of you, but a couple of you were wondering about the Flophouse contest, since we haven't mentioned anything about it since we mentioned the winner. Judy, the winner of the Flophouse contest, you may remember her as the person who put delightful temporary tattoos all over her body.
Wait, those were temporary? I think we should revoke her her victory.
She is apparently moving away.
That's too bad.
So we probably can't have her on the show. However, I want to keep the option open. I want to keep the invite open because honestly, she was so far ahead.
She earned it.
She was the best entry by far. But however,
she was. It was way better than my entry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yours was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a dead bird. You handed me a dead bird.
You have a cat. I figured it would remind you of your cat, and you'd like it.
No.
Wrong. Okay. Yeah. So if Judy ever wants to come and watch a movie,
I didn't even kill that.
You're
bird.
Invited.
I just found it.
However, the other contest we have running. The Uva Bowl contest.
That's how you pronounce that?
That is how you weren't here for the last episode when we talked about this.
Wait a minute. You guys did one without me?
Yeah.
What'd you watch?
Wild Hogs. Yeah. Anyway,
Wild Hogs?
You know.
Okay, well, I was an extra in that movie, so I'm not allowed to actually talk about it in the podcast. So it's okay you guys did it without me.
Yeah.
Were you an extra in the scene where they were at the chili festival or whatever? Or were you an extra
Absolutely.
In the scene where
chili festival.
Where they were skinny dipping and the family came along?
No, I just watched that scene when I watched it at home last night on Laserdisc.
Limited edition pressing one of the Wild Hogs Laserdisc.
But anyway, we have a winner for the create and cast an Uwe Boll film contest. I just want to read it.
Okay.
This is for Wolfenstein 3D colon.
That's a good choice.
The movie / 3D. We've got here former LA Raiders superstar and CBS personality Howie Long.
Nice.
As Allied spy William B.J. Blazkowicz.
Did you guys ever read Wizard Magazine, The Guide to Comics?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where they were really pushing the idea of Howie Long playing Venom / Eddie Brock in a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they.
They really
thought that
through.
He was so
well,
good.
He was so charming in those ads with Terry Hatcher. That
this was way before that. This
was
when he was making that firefighter
one?
Movie.
Yeah, it was like Fireproof or Flamestorm. Or Flame.
Axe Fire.
Ultimate Flamestorm.
Blue Flame. The other thing was.
Heartfire.
And back during. And Wizard still has that column, by the way. Not that I look at
Wizard. I haven't read
magazine.
That magazine in years.
I looked through. It was in my friend's car one time. I was looking through it. But like. And for a long time, up until pretty much the release, they were pushing for Glenn Danzig to be Wolverine.
Yeah, they were really big on that.
That was weird.
They're big on people who don't have acting careers playing characters.
Well, I think that being comics, like, people, first of all, I think that they maybe, like, just focused on the look.
Maybe.
Like, this person can capture the look of the comic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but can they perform? Can they actually?
They got the goods.
Yeah,
the acting chops.
Well, anyway, let me get through this this winning entry though.
Okay, drop it on us. Amanda, so far, it's good.
Amanda Peet as Nazi prison commandant Isla Bronsteiner, who secretly loves the strange American spy. At the beginning of the movie's last act, she eats the poison sausage, the Fuhrer intended for Blazkowicz. We got Alec Baldwin as cyborg Adolf Hitler.
I don't know about that casting.
Thora Birch as cyborg Eva Braun. Who do you look at for cyborg?
Cyborg Adolf Hitler. I mean, my go-to is Wallace Shawn, and I think he might be good at that. But I don't know. Let's see.
Okay. Ringo Starr.
Oh, Shia LaBeouf. Cyborg Adolf Hitler. Okay. There you go. Done.
Ringo Starr and Zach Galifianakis as Nazi prisoners Lieutenant Smith Smitty and Lieutenant Frenchie, respectively.
Just to see the two of them on screen together. Yeah.
Chemistry. Explosive.
Jamie Kennedy is head prison guard Hans Gross, who BJ beats to death with a bust of Hitler. Later, when he and Isla jog past the body, she exclaims, "Mein Gott, it's Gross!" BJ shrugs and mutters, "Baby, I've seen grosser things." Isla rolls her eyes along with a musical sting by an accordion. And lastly, Christopher Lloyd as President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
I want this movie made for that because Christopher Lloyd doesn't do enough work.
Yeah. So that's Colin from Portland, Oregon.
What about Suburban Commando?
I didn't say he made no movies ever in history. I said he doesn't do enough work.
Anyway.
Wait, when it's... Okay.
Colin.
I didn't say that actor's never been featured in a film before.
I don't know who that is.
Suburban Commando is like 14 years old.
But I just saw that in the movie theater yesterday.
Colin, you should write with your full address to theflophousepodcast@gmail.com so we can send your award... Your prize.
Hey, what's his prize?
It's season one of Rocky and Bullwinkle because that's a DVD I own and am getting rid of.
Don't pull back the curtain too much.
Yeah.
And a signed copy of Wild Hog signed by all of us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The actual copy we used for the show.
That's a piece. We could have sent that to the Smithsonian, but instead you're going to get it, Colin.
Yeah. You can frame that. Or you can do, or you can throw it
or
out.
Or you can watch it. It's yours. It's now your property.
You're responsible for it.
Listen, you legally can do anything.
You're actually legally required to take it. I don't want it anymore, so there you go.
Maybe, also, you know what? Maybe I'll throw something in, too.
Yeah?
I don't know what yet, but...
Okay.
Expect something else along with it.
Daily shows.
Yeah, so expect some sort of crap.
Hang on, some sort of swag.
I threw out a lot of Daily Show promotional stuff that I should have kept from 2004 that... Colin might have liked.
Okay, stop with the mouth.
hey, Sarah Schaefer had to plug something while she was on the show, so let me just plug something because it's been a while since I've been in a live show. But if you live in the New York area, you can come see me in a show called Shameful Display Presents You, Your World, and You, which is a political sketch comedy show, and it's going to be October 19, 26, and... Those are two dates, not 1926 a year.
Okay. October 19th. I was going to say, let me get my time machine, Dan.
And
ho-hum.
November.
Maybe after the show we can go down to the Stork Club and hang out with Zelda and F. Scott.
And November 2 and 9 at 9:30 at the Magnet Theater. That's at magnettheater.com if you want to look it up. And it's a mere $5.
Swing by the Magnet Theater and see the show, then over to the Cotton Club.
Yeah.
The
Duke Ellington Orchestra.
If you're like, what's this douche look like in real life?
Dinner at Del Frisco is with Meyer Lansky.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Played by Patrick Dempsey in the movie Mobsters.
Anyone else?
Played to a T, might I add.
Then it's off to Paris with Ernest and Gertrude.
Anyone else have any plugs before we move on?
I mean, I always have plenty of stuff to plug, but I won't get into it.
All right.
I'm not allowed to plug.
Okay, yeah, Stuart doesn't understand the concept of plugging things. So, all right, let's move on to our recommendations, movies we actually like, because it is Shocktober here at the
Chains rattling.
We're recommending horror films. So,
ring around the rosy.
We are angering our fans.
Sound of spiders.
Yep. Let me take out my Fright Sounds Volume 4 tape from the cassette player. Okay, Dan, continue.
Anyway, yes.
We're doing horror movie recommendations, and just to stop you guys from making Fright Sounds, let me go first. I would like to recommend The Signal. It's a film, I believe it came out last year. It's about a mysterious signal that is broadcast over the radio and television, and it makes everyone very aggressive, makes them paranoid. It's sort of, people are still, you know, rational in the sense that they think that they're making sense, but they, but their perception is altered so that they attack people in ways because they're hallucinating and such and such. And it's split into three sections. It was actually directed by three different people, and it has kind of an overarching story. But each segment has a different tone. Like the first one's sort of like a zombie movie. The second one is like a horror comedy, like a black comedy. And the third one is kind of a psychological thriller. And it's good. I recommend it. Keep it short.
Mm.
I am. I'm pretty sure I didn't recommend this last time I was on, but I was pretty drunk, so I don't remember. But I would like to recommend a British film called The Cottage. I don't know if you can see it over here in the old United States yet, but it's it stars Andy Serkis, who played Gollum, and Reese Shearsmith from The League of Gentlemen. And the premise is that a pair of kind of bumbling guys, pair of bumbling brothers, end up kidnapping the daughter of a mob boss, and they take her to this cottage out in the woods. Unknown to them, they've actually stumbled into the predatory grounds of a hillbilly cannibal murderer guy. And stuff gets killed. It's good. It's a horror comedy. I'd watch it.
I met comedy. Andy Serkis once. He's a very hairy man. Very short and very hairy. That's what I have to say about that.
Elliot.
All right. The scary movie I'll recommend is one. I'm going to pick an old movie because that's what I do. If anyone hasn't seen the movie The Old Dark House, which was one that James Whale made right after Frankenstein but before Bride of Frankenstein. I think that's the timeline of it. And it is the classic story of a couple, had their car breaks down on a rainy night, they're near an old dark house, and there is a creepy family living in the house, and there's nothing supernatural in the movie, it's just creepy stuff. An insane brother, insane sister, they're both very creepy. They have another brother who they've locked upstairs because he's too dangerous to let out. Boris Karloff is their disgruntled butler who drinks and gets violent. It's just very kind of insane in a way 30s movies are sometimes. And also I'm going to recommend, even though it's Shocktober and this is not a scary movie, a movie I just finished watching this morning called The Friends of Eddie Coyle with Robert Mitchum and Peter Boyle. Oh, and Alex Rocco, which is a really good crime thriller from the 70s about kind of criminals who are career criminals and don't like doing this anymore because it's not a great way to make a living, but they kind of have to live with the consequences of having this life. And Robert Mitchum is really good in it.
Yeah.
It has a very inappropriate score, though. It's kind of like guys hanging out in seedy bars a lot and kind of dealing with the unhappiness of where their life is now that they're not young, but they're still involved in crime. But the soundtrack is like, like very 70s, but
like the Night Court theme.
No, that's do 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 do
part.
Yeah, but this is more of a guitar sound, less of a bass guitar sound.
You're listening to mouth instruments.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, Bobby McFerrin just walked in.
Oh, man. Goodbye, Bobby. So
this is like an old-time radio show. Put your things down by the fire. Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle,
good
crinkle, crinkle.
That Foley artist.
You think that saying words is the same as having sound effects?
I'm kind of an onomatopoeia type guy.
All right. Well, this has been a fun night. I learned
nothing takes the fun out of a night like stating it's fun. Nothing deflates a room than that.
Yeah, so we're done, right?
Yeah, we're done.
Okay, cool.
Good night, everyone. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin for the foreseeable future.
See ya.
Bye. Chain mail sound effects.
Bats flapping. Bats flapping.
Chains.
Werewolf sounds. Welcome.